where strategy gaming meets good vibes. No stress, just critical moves.
Hello everyone, welcome to Critical Moves Podcast. This is Tim here for another episode, joined by Adam.
Hello.
And our newest friend joining us, Jack.
Hello everybody.
All right, we're here today to talk about the games that we play. Now, look at that, we also play some games in our spare time. Let's get it started now, straight away. Adam, what are you playing for the moment? What's one of the games on your list?
I've been playing a couple of games. To be honest, I wanted to talk about Alien Dark Descent, and I will explain in a bit why I won't talk about it, but later I will mention probably Bar. That as far as I'm aware, Timothy, you have also some opinion about it.
I do.
And I guess that's it. And we'll see how much time we have left.
All right. Jack, what are you playing?
Most recently, I have been playing Mountain Blade 2 Bannerlord.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. You know what? Perhaps you can list all the games that you play, and then we'll talk about them one at a time, I suppose. Go for it, Jack.
Right. So I'd say the three most recent strategy games I've been playing recently are, like I just said, Mountain Blade 2. I've also been playing a lot of Stellaris, and I've also been playing some Tropico 5 specifically.
Oh, okay, yeah. Tropico, that's a really fun series. And Adam, what are the other ones for you?
As I said, Bar, also a little bit of Riftbreaker and Dungeons, but a little bit. I don't want to talk about them.
Old school.
This is like, really old school game because it was in the Humble Bundle, but you know how it is.
All right, so for me, I play Star Sector recently quite a bit, also Victoria 3, and yeah, I also play a Bar. That is beyond all reason for anyone not in the know yet about the greatest RTS game out there at the moment. All right.
Hate to admit, but I believe it is.
Jack, you said Mountain Blades. It is not a strict, straight-up strategy game, but there is quite a bit of strategy involved in it, I would say, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would. I get how you'd probably consider it more of a simulation. I think what's interesting about it is the amount of resource management and, in general, troop management, which is, I think, the real gameplay loop of Mountain Blade. I think the strategy comes down to, obviously, there's interacting systems at play between not having food and the morale of your troops decreasing until they desert your party. But the strategy, to me, obviously, there's formations in battle, but it does come in having to get from essentially playable space to playable space in order to recruit the troops, and the management of resources in that way, having to maintain money for the troops, having to maintain money to have acquired the troops and to equip them further. Leveling up the troops requires money, and obviously the day-night cycle lends itself more to a real-time strategy game, but I find it really interesting how it's a simulation, I would almost say considerable to something real-time like Stellaris, where if they had it in play, I think something that would be really interesting in Stellaris, which I know I'm jumping ahead, is the kind of the crossover, if a ship had if a ship reached you within space and they had interacted with you the same way Raiders or a party does in Mountain Blade. But I think that is something that is at least unique to me and why I would consider it a strategy game.
That's super funny that you say it like this is not scripted at all, but like that you say it exactly like that, because if you would take Mountain Blades and you put it into space, do you know what you get? You get Star Sector, which is exactly the game that I've been playing.
Right.
Have you guys played Star Sector?
I wish I would play it.
It's exactly like Mountain Blade. Like, you are this one dude. You're flying around. There's this big world with all these different factions and so on. Instead of a horse, you have a spaceship, obviously. And you can start off by just trading, by going around. You can fight pirates to claim rewards. You can be a pirate yourself if you so like. And then eventually you can start up your own planets and build, make buildings there and so on. Exactly like Man Blade, but in space, yeah. And it's actually really fun. The combat also is really fun. The combat is also similarly like Man Blade, where you send your ships, but you control your own ship.
Is it like X4? Because there's also like a sim game that you can basically like, you start as a single ship, then you can have a fleet and so on. Are you aware of this game?
No. But it's the same concept, yeah.
And there was also a game like Space Rangers or something like that. Yeah, looks nice. I wish I would play it, but it seems to me like it is kind of in the sphere of this really advanced and deep game. Is it, or is it more like you can basically start and work your way up?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of interacting systems, and there's a lot to know, especially once you start to have your own faction, you know, with your own planets and colonies that you have to grow, and there's like a whole economy system behind it. And that's not very accessible in the beginning, but for the most part of the game, what you're playing with is like installing guns on your spaceships and so on, which is also a lot of fun. You can customize your spaceships quite a lot, and that's nice. A bit like your armor and stuff in Man Blade.
So would you tell? So do I need to watch 1 hour YouTube tutorial in order to grasp the game, or I can simply start playing it and it would be cool? 20 minute tutorial.
Maybe 20 minutes. Yeah, that would be good. So simply because there's a lot to know that you wouldn't know immediately. Like some, you can put your sensors on or off. You can go into dark mode to try to evade enemies and so on, and that's not immediately obvious in the beginning. And then you can like lose all your fuel, and then you get sucked into a black hole and so on. So that's things that can happen.
And how is the UI of the game?
Because no, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. It's just not always very clear. For example, when you produce things, you produce fuel, for example, and you see that you produce 5 amounts of fuel, and it's not clear that you can trade any amounts of that. Oh, okay, it's getting a bit too complex to explain it. So let's move on. Adam, you have a couple of games that you're playing at the moment.
Yeah.
How do you decide which one you play? Is it like in your mood? Is it like, oh, I only have half an hour, so I'm going to play this one, or I have more time, I'm going to play that one?
Good question. So basically, like, I'm, let's say, opportunistic player. So what occurred is that I saw the Humble Choice Bundle, and the Alien Dark the Descent was the part of it. And I looked at the gameplay, and it occurred to me that it's kind of like RTS, XCOM kind of game. And I started playing it. And what I can say is that, have you watched Aliens, guys, the movie?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So when the game starts, you can see, like, when the you see basically space, and you see a spaceship going to the space station, and then the letters are moving in the same way like in the movie, you know, like this.
Yeah.
They're like being drawn like alien. And when I saw it, I was like, oh my god, my pants are wet. Like, immediately. Like, this is the void. And I was like, oh man, I will play this game. I will play the heck out of this game. So I start playing it, and it's cool. It's kind of like RTS, kind of like commando style. Basically, you control the party of 4 people. It's for me, the most similar game, I would say, is to this kind of game, is Warcraft 3. And the map scenarios where you only control the characters.
Yeah,
like, you didn't need to build the base, and you had, like, I don't know, 5 heroes, 5 characters you controlled. And basically, this game is similar. You control, like, a group of people. You are not building anything new, but you make a setup for them. Each mission is like starts with kind of XCOM base management a little bit. And then you move on. And I wish I would talk to you about this game like for an hour, for 2 hours, but unfortunately, I haven't played this game too much.
Oh, because. Okay. But you played it a bit, at least.
Because.
Right?
Yes, a bit, like let's say like 5, 6 hours, 7.
Oh, okay,
and then okay. And then I have a group of friends, and they told me, "Oh, Adam, we should play some multiplayer games." And I told them, "Oh, I heard from Timothy about this game, Bar Beyond All Reason, and OMG, this is such a good game! Like, guys, I am a casual gamer. For me, like playing multiplayer with other people from all around the world is always a tragic experience. I'm the kind of guy that loses more than half the matches, but this game, wow, it hooked me so much. Like every evening I'm thinking about this game, and even it got to the point that like we catch with my friends like for half an hour to play just one game and, you know, and go on doing what we've been doing before. Like, it's such a good game.
I really like it. Do you play co-op versus the Raptors, or do you play against each other?
So, basically, the most of the games are co-op versus AI. I know it's not the best, but we have the scenarios that basically we increase number of the AIs. We make like scenario where we, for example, four of us play against five or six or something like that on some special maps. So that's what we are doing. I heard that there is also the kind of like tower defense mode. Yes, am I right?
Yeah,
or like horde mode?
Yeah, horde mode, yeah, basically, yeah.
And there's also, and I heard it is good, but it is, as far as I know, it's kind of tough. So, yeah. And I'm a casual gamer, as I told you. So, I'm a little bit afraid. And we played a couple of online matches, and I lost all of them. Every single match, and I cried and cried and cried and cried again. That is basically my experience multiplayer matches, and the people there are they're really into the game. So for me, like, I feel that I let them down by being me and playing my style.
Yeah, but there's a matchmaking. There's like a matchmaking score, so that, you know, if you lose a lot, then you get bundled up with player that can play better than the people on the other team. But yeah, no, it can be really intense. A game Bar. I don't know if you've played that game, Jack.
No, I have not. I am a little bit more familiar with it now, though, after listening to the podcast and hearing everybody talk about it.
So it is a game that you can sink in a lot of hours, because the skill ceiling is just so high. So anyone interested at home in playing a game with a very high skill ceiling where you can pump in huge amount of hours and keep increasing your skill, Beyond All Reason is pretty good. But then it can be quite difficult as a new player indeed, because if you get matched with players that have played a lot, it can get quite tough, as you just experienced, Adam.
The issue with this game, maybe it's not an issue, but this game is all about, like, maybe not the grand strategy, but strategy in a big scale. When I played RTS games and I played Command & Conquer, it's kind of like a small-scale RTS games. Okay, there are a lot of units, but the map is so small that basically you need to micromanage the unit and so on and so forth. And what I like about Bar is that basically control unit like you would control armies, and you have fronts. When you zoom out the map, you can see, okay, so this here you have like west front, here we have some, I don't know, smaller scale battles and so on and so forth. We have naval warfare. It's really interesting in that sense. And what I like is that basically while I'm getting older, for me it's harder and harder to keep up with like, you know, small scale StarCraft / Command & Conquer style RTSs. And because this game has much bigger scale, it's kind of much easier to cope with. Like, you don't need to micromanage it so much. Of course, if you do, you are better because you can harass your opponent. But again, and one thing that I want to add is that a couple of episodes ago, you laughed in the end of the episode that I don't like Tempest Rising. That's a good game. That's a good game. But this game, what I really appreciate about this is readability of the interface and the screen. All the time, I can see what is happening, when I'm clicking, where are the units, what is the order, the UI and UX is amazing. You can feel that the players who are playing the game basically tinkered it, like, bit by bit. They created the shortcuts. Like, everything is so well designed in terms of interface that I wished, and that's what I'm thinking about Tempest Rising. It's a good game, but you could feel that the UX is not so well designed. And here, it's amazing. Like, guys, you like, Timothy, okay, you know this game better than me, and I guess 90% of people out there. But Jack, for sure, you should play this game. It's really, really good.
Oh, it's on my radar.
It was basically players who played this game and be like, oh, you know what? It would be nice if the UX would be like that, actually, because, you know, and then they implemented themselves and repeat that over like many, many years and tons of players. And that's what you get is like everyone contributing a little bit and making something really cool with it. And yeah, I agree with you with the scale of it. It is a much larger scale in terms of strategy. You make broader decisions rather than micro decisions. And
you can make mistakes. That's the difference.
Yeah, and yeah, no. So if that sounds something fun, it is free and always will be free to try and play, which is really cool, I think.
That's also why we tried it. I was like, let's choose the game. Oh, it's free, and everyone tells me it's good. And oh my god, it's so good. Like, really good.
Jack, your other games, Stellaris and Tropico 5, very different games from each other. How do you decide which one to play?
Well, I think in general, anytime you're dealing with a Paradox game, you kind of have to clear out your schedule for the next week or so in order to start a save. So I'm kind of the opposite end on what you would consider an opportunistic gamer. It comes down to I usually actually choose dedicated time frames to play Tropico more often than Stellaris, because it's actually a game I find relaxing. It's something I can actually sit down and you know someone would love to watch somebody play that game. My fiance loves to watch me play Tropico 5, so it's kind of something that we'd both sit down and do together. Same thing with a game like City Skylines. Those games are just far more approachable in that way, where despite not having to be co-op, it's something I think you can be more like quickly invested in. Stellaris, though, I mean, yeah, I tell my friends and family I'll see them later, and I kind of close the door and lock it on the outside, and I'm just trapped in there and locked in with the empire that I've built for the next month or so.
And it's fun. Tropico is like a very fun game, like fun focused. It's it doesn't take itself too seriously. You can play it as casual as you feel like. But then Stellaris, it's serious stuff, right?
Yeah, I mean, there are varying ways in which people would go about it. I'm not the kind of person who spends a ton of time articulating the entire history of my empire before into a notepad within the game before I even hit the launch button. I'm kind of, sometimes I simply just like to choose a pre-selected empire, which I think a lot of people would like to, you know, burn me at the stake for, but
I don't mind some of the things. You?
Yeah. I don't mind some of the things that Paradox has done to pre-establish empires. There's some that I've pre-built that I'll rotate between. It comes down to which DLCs, and generally, I kind of like to pace myself on content. So my runs in Stellaris, from a lot of people, probably, you know, they rotate between when the newest DLC drops and they want to start a new run. For me, I don't have all the DLCs for Stellaris, so I take my time to pick and choose which ones I want to invest myself into, because I also, as much as I think they're all essential for the best possible experience within the game, I like to pace myself on which ones I think are a necessity for the run in which I'm trying to, like, the growth of the game for me.
But, I find that a bit odd with Stellaris, that, yeah, it's such a huge time investment, and there's so many options that you want to explore, and like, oh, I want to try this kind of empire, but then every time you fall back on the early game, and you play the early game, like, so many times, but then you don't see the end game as much. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I generally, I think most people probably do this. I try to extend the time frame of the game and go as long as possible within an empire. But I think it frankly has the same problem that a lot of long form strategy games have, where by the time you would even reach an in-game crisis, you're kind of burnt out on the empire you have, and you need that absolutely fascinating opening game where I mean, to me, the best part of the game is starting your empire and having no idea who your neighbors are, and coming across blooper aliens and having to translate their dialect so that you can open up like a diplomacy window. And so it's the mystery of not knowing who's around you and what's going to play out, because the only thing you can really do at the start of Stellaris is gamble on what kind of empire you're aiming for. But I mean, I agree, it's difficult to see through those games, and it becomes pretty monotonous having to replay the same opening, because after a while I'm like, I know I have Delta aliens nearby, but I mean, genuinely, I would love to. I can't actually say that I've encountered every in-game crisis, because it's just difficult to reach the end of the save.
Yeah, yeah. There are quite a few games that have that as well, and it becomes, especially towards the middle, from the middle to the end of the game, it becomes a lot about micromanagement, about doing the same thing over and over again, but in a different place. And yeah, it has a pacing issue, and I see that quite a lot. For example, Distant Worlds 2 has a similar thing. It's a very similar kind of game, but after some time, like, okay, now you're big, you've expanded into your natural area, and then now the war with your neighbors gets quite repetitive and old. I'm not sure how they would need to fix that for me to enjoy it, but it would need to shift gears, like almost making a second game and gluing that right into the half of the game, like with different mechanics or something, I don't know.
I haven't been playing Stellaris for quite a while, but as far as I remember, at some point of the game, you can automate a couple of like sections of your empire, like management stuff. Am I right?
Yeah, that is true. You can choose individual sectors to automate and assign governors to them. It kind of becomes an issue that I think exists in a lot of strategy games, though, where anytime impose your another empire, if you absorb that empire into yours, if you assign subsectors within your empire, you just watch your resources immediately go into the red, and you're not understanding what mathematics are playing on behind the scenes. So it is a gamble. Obviously, there's probably mathematicians that are playing this game far better than I am, but that is true. You can automate those things. And in regards to what you were just saying, I do think that Stellaris could probably succeed in beefing up the middle game and the gameplay loop to incentivize reaching that point and finishing a save by having their DLCs, their future content expansions, answer more systemic issues that exist at that point. I think that, like we've been talking about, there becomes a monotony or a tedium to the same gameplay loops after you reach a very clear, definitive like exploration stage at the start, and then there's just hundreds of years of combat and expansion, where so much of the game is just time passing with you trying to acquire new planets and technology. If they could build systems where we could take our eyes away from any of the numbers for a while and enjoy doing more in-depth diplomacy or literally anything in that regards, I think it would help. I know they try to answer those things, or at least try to spruce up the simulation, the sandbox aspect of it. Like they've recently added in essentially like solar storms that pass through areas and affect the resource management of those sectors of the galaxy, which is interesting, but it doesn't answer the systemic problems in the middle of being bored talking to your neighbors because they haven't changed in the past 100 years.
What's it called? The Galactic Council or the thing where, where you cast votes in? I think that could be maybe worked on and a focus on diplomacy where you feel like, okay, this really matters and I'm going to invest a lot of time and effort into a gameplay loop within that Galactic Council so that once you have your natural borders set up, your only way to play the game is not just expanding your neighbors, but having some active part in that diplomacy. I think diplomacy is something that's very, very under-made in most strategy games. I think the diplomacy could be made a lot more fun if like there was a proper focus on it.
But could you think like, okay, so could you think of like of a single game that have done it well, like diplomacy? In my opinion, like diplomacy always is kind of like a math, like pulling the string kind of game that like two teams basically like you pull the opponent to like you and someone pulls this opponent to like you and so on and so forth. So I do believe that doing great diplomacy like never happened, or maybe it has. So If listeners know it, please post it down in a comment. I wish to know.
Yeah, usually it's like you push a button that says improve relations, and then you press that button, and then that's your diplomacy. Wow. Number go up. Good.
And usually it's like you do diplomacy only to achieve the goal, and you don't have a goal in it. So, for example, in order to trade some resources, you basically like leave it alone, and it plays out however it plays out. You basically don't care about it.
Okay, so if I have to think of an example, a game I've mentioned earlier, Suzerain. It's almost like a text-based RPG game, but you're the president of a country. So it is like it's also extremely strategic, since there's also resource management. There's also some strategic elements to it. But there you do have diplomacy, and that's like really well fleshed out because, I mean, okay, the game is about talking with people, and then you have dialogue options. So that probably would not fit within Stellaris. But their diplomacy, it's clever. You have to take information about the other countries, take in considerations, their alliances and rivalries from the other countries. And then you have to basically make the right decisions based off of that information that's well done, but obviously that would not fit with most of the games that we otherwise consider strategy games.
And Jack, I want to ask you, what is the status of diplomacy? I guess they reworked the system, but how does it work right now in Stellaris?
I can't necessarily speak on what they might have most recently changed in the biggest mainline game update. I know they're pushing for 4.0 as well, which is they've actually talked about here on the podcast that it's supposed to change the way populations work, and I think they're in general trying to minimize pop-ups. So I think they're trying to streamline it, but from my experience, diplomacy, at least on the build that I've been playing, is it's similar to the way it worked before. There's generally an improve relations button. I know that since launch they've added in more accessibility, or I guess functionality for envoys that you send between empires, which I do find more fascinating. Having an envoy that can both, you basically choose if your envoys are going to work on meeting new empires, translating their dialect, and basically being what you would imagine in your headcanon is pulling the weight on an introduction of galactic powers. And then you can also just send them to improve relations. But I do think that across the updates that they've made over time, it's more interesting. I think it's just more of what we've all encountered. Empires in general and Stellaris are, their relations are going to be based on trade value. It's going to be based on proximity, the type of empires that you have just naturally conflicting within the programmed engine capabilities of the game, like the systems at play of a overly religious, zealous empire next to a materialist empire is always going to conflict. And then similarly, I actually think the best aspects of diplomacy in the game occur on the one-off empires that exist. There are the the Galactic Commerce Embassies and the Artisan Troops that you can interact with, and they have some of those interesting diplomacy actions within the game. Some of the more intriguing interactions that you can have are with the roaming marauder clans that exist only shipborne within space. Those are just far more interesting interactions, and diplomacy with more independent characters like the Shroud that you can interact with as a psionic ascendant empire. Those that essentially transcend our reality, our dimension, and experience things. It's Stellaris is always at its best when it's interacting with the most general yet intriguing aspects of sci-fi. And so their diplomacy suffers because I think it's the only part of the game where they are under conditions to not, that they're basically constrained to not be able to offer you the most amount of interesting science fiction flavor within the game. I mean, everything you interact with as a pop-up is a novel on its own, or an interesting premise for a science fiction game you could pitch to a AAA studio. But the moment you start interacting with an empire for diplomacy, it has to be as generic as possible to entertain any ideas for whatever that randomized empire is. And so it's unfortunate. I think if they had leaned into it, I don't think they should have had specific set empires that were forced into every save within the game. But the pre-constructed empires that Paradox launches with or come out of the box, I think should have had very specific flavor and lore so that as you interact with them, even if it's your 1,000th time playing Stellaris, interacting with a specific empire with Paradox chosen lore would give you interesting dialogue options, especially as they added to that across updates. I mean, they don't have to be voiced, so yeah. I think it'd be easy to add content to.
Yeah, because it can be overwhelming to check, okay, this race now, what are they like? Oh, they're more like this and more like that. And then you have to do that with every single race. And then at some point you're like, okay, yeah, whatever. This is just a race. And you don't see for the fullness of what they are because it's too much to take in. But yeah, I see what you mean. If they were more sets, you'd be like, oh, yeah, these ones. I remember these ones. They have this and this and this and this. Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting, actually, because one... game on my list is Victoria 3, another Paradox game. And the way I enjoy it is with a bunch of friends and playing online, and we each pick nations and stuff. I wouldn't necessarily want to do that with Stellaris, I don't think. I don't think I would want to play Stellaris with a bunch of friends. Maybe I should, but Victoria 3 does like a lot of fun. There's like a lot more diplomacy related stuff, I feel like, in Victoria 3, even though it has a improve relations button. But I quite like it, and I like Victoria 3 in general. Have you guys played Victoria 3?
Yeah, I've played it and it's really good. I wish I played it more. But back to this scale you told, like this, you wouldn't play a multiplayer game in Stellaris. The thing is, I guess, that Paradox games could be separated into two different genres, let's say. Like, kind of fast-paced grand strategy games, and Victoria 3, Curse of Iron are this kind of games. And like the big build-up kind of empire designing stuff, and I would say Stellaris, Europa Universalis, and Crusader Kings are this kind of game. So Victoria 3... it's really cool for me because you can basically, I don't know, a couple of hours, you can finish the whole play, yes? It takes like about 100 years, am I right? Tim? Yes. And Hearts of Iron takes like 20 years. And basically in this time scale, you can start and finish and have your adventure. And in Stellaris, I guess you start and after 30 hours, you may or may not finish. You basically wake up 2 days later without knowing what's happening, which day is it. Like, this is the kind of game Stellaris is. And Victoria 3 is like, okay, I have a nice evening, let's go, let's play some games and let's go Victoria 3. Of course, it's still really really deep and really profound, let's call it that way, in the how it's built, like the mechanics. Like Victoria 3, I guess, has the best economy in all the games I know at this point. Like, I've never encountered the game with better economics than Victoria 3. It's amazing what they've done, and it's simulating like a free market, and it's I don't know, it's astonishing even. But yeah, still, it's faster game, for sure, than Stellaris.
Yeah, with Hearts of Iron 2, what I used to do quite a bit is that I would play it competitively multiplayer. So you would find like Discord servers with people coming together to play a multiplayer game of Hearts of Iron 3. And it was like a bunch of rules. Okay, this you have to do, this you cannot do, you know, just so that the game would be fair. And then you get put into your factions and you play like for one day, you play like 8 hours. So a bunch of strangers you've never talked to before, you play 8 hours of this like really dedicated competitive game. But that's like tons and tons of fun for me.
But you still like... in 8 hours you would finish it. Yeah, and Stellaris, in 8 hours you would probably, I don't know, maybe be like start at mid game, maybe look at the mid game, like just touch the mid game. That's what happens in 8 hours in Stellaris.
After 8 hours, oh, I found you. I know where you are now.
So okay, so I still haven't seen half of the civilizations. Nice.
I have played a Stellaris multiplayer, and I think that's it's interesting because it encounters a lot of the same issues that you've talked about. It is so long. I would find it fascinating to do something like a Discord-specific run for Stellaris, like acquiring a group of people I've never met before, because something you're going to run into having played with friends that were like my personal friends, you encounter the same issue where you interact with empires, but you have an incentive to keep each other in the game, and then ultimately you're all working together, and then only one of you gets to become the galactic throne contender by the end of the game. And so if it was with random people, it would be a really interesting game of elimination where they have no stakes on whether or not you need to stay in the game and your empires, and it would really come down to actual multiplayer strategy. And I think that would be, it'd be interesting, especially as there's a detachment in the way battles in Stellaris work. But having played it, I think it's a lot of fun. So I would have to argue that Stellaris can be really interesting in that way, multiplayer, just because cooperatively you're probably creating those initial early tech sharing trees or tech sharing diplomacy deals, trade deals, things like that, as one of you acquires a galactic resource that the other person doesn't have. So it's fun, but it does encounter the exact issues you talked about.
Yeah, and what I like about Victoria 3 is what you mentioned, Adam, is like a really cool simulator. And what I find especially fun is like I find myself making decisions in Victoria 3 where I'm like, beforehand, I would never understand how people could make that kind of decision. And then now I find myself making those decisions, similar decisions as people have made in the past, in history, leading countries. And then I empathize so much with those people. Like, oh, I get it now. You know, this is why this system was put in place, because you want to make the landowners happy, because otherwise they're going to start a revolution. So you need to maybe change a law that makes them a little bit happier so that they're not going to like hang you or whatever. So I do find that really interesting, because it simulates really well the economy, but it also simulates really well the political situation with like people radicalizing if they don't have enough money to go by, and then if you have too many radicals, you know, you will have turmoil in your country, and the different interest groups and different populations have different jobs, and then those jobs have tendency to lean towards one political group or another. This is incredibly fascinating. And then what you can even do is like you set up your economy and you create jobs purposely such that you would have more people of a certain type of population that have certain interest group, and then that means that you will have more political power thanks to that. It's like it's all a well-oiled machine, at least when there's no bugs, that is.
And how does it work in multiplayer, like this economic stuff? Like, are you, for example, like competing in terms of how much steel you produce, and then you basically destroy the market and so on and so forth? I've never seen the multiplayer game of Victoria 3.
So Victoria 2 was actually better with that than Victoria 3 is, but it was much less accessible. So with Victoria 3, I think the trade system is still a little bit lacking, but there is an update coming in June, where they say they will revamp the trade system, because at the moment it's not incredibly interactive. Sure, if you produce a whole lot of iron and then one of the other players doesn't have enough iron, they can import from you, and then you can purposely say, hey, you know what, I'm gonna build extra iron, you can import from me, and then you build more of that and I will import that from you. Like, you can have this like oral agreement, and then they can like change their laws so that you can't trade with them anymore, and then you screwed them over, haha. But no, mostly what happens in multiplayer is the diplomacy part. That gets a lot more interesting. You know, you're on voice chat with each other, and you play the game with a voice diplomacy. That is so much more interesting than the improve relation button. And I think that's where the multiplayer shines a lot in a game like that, because now you don't need this hyper complex diplomacy system to interact with, and you just chat with each other, and diplomacy gets much more real in that sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting. Interesting. So the system that works in single player doesn't work basically in multiplayer, kind of.
Especially because Victoria Tree, in Europe at least, it was like the dance of powers, you know, the balance of powers.
Yeah.
And all the great nations making sure that none of the other nations gets too big. And then if one of the smaller ones gets bullied, they kind of come to help to make sure, you know, there's no snowball effect. And then that gets really very true in voice multiplayer. And that feels very fun.
Yeah, I wish I would play this game more. But, you know, I as I told you, I'm an opportunistic player. I need to have a vibe to play it. And right now, I don't have one. I don't have it.
I think we have your last game, Adam, Riftbreaker. What's I've never heard of about that game. What is that?
Okay, so basically it's tower defense / twin stick shooter game, and this was created by a Polish company, as far as I know, and it is basically you land on the planet. And there are a bunch of animals attacking your base, and you develop your base, you develop technology in order to expand and explore and so on and so forth. I didn't have a chance to tell you guys that basically, I don't know, 10 years ago, I was a huge fan of tower defense games. Like on my phone, I played each one of them, and I loved the genre. Like it was basically my main field that I was interested in terms of computer games. But today, like, I don't play them much, and I try to play Riftbreaker, and I don't know if you know this feeling that you start playing game and you feel that you should like it because it has everything that you love, but after an hour you're like, I don't want to play it anymore. And this is the issue with this game.
Yeah,
I don't know why. I tried to play it 3 times. For example, it happened to me also with Hearts of Iron 4, but you know, after the third or fourth time, I basically it grasped me and I played, you know, 200 more hours because I liked it so much. But in this game, it has really cool tower defense mechanics. It has good UI. It has good tech tree. It has really good campaign. But you know, I don't know. Like I tried to play it again. And I wanted to talk more about it during the podcast. But first of all, Alien Dark Descent is much better game. And second of all, Beyond All Reason is amazing game. So that's why I stopped playing it. So yeah, but if you are a fan of tower defense games, you should play it. You should at least try it. And it can be pretty cheap during the sales. So why not?
All right. Then maybe a last question for you guys. Is there a game that is in your view that you're thinking, oh, maybe I'm going to play this next or like soon I might pick this up? Jack?
I'm really interested in Paradox's other game, Age of Wonders. I believe the fourth one just came out. I'm pretty intrigued by the concept of that one. I do want to hop into Age of Wonders. I haven't played enough other Paradox games, so I think that's my next pickup.
Nice. Adam?
I want to try Sins of Solar Empire 2.
I heard lots
about these games. I saw on Reddit like lots of posts praising the game, that it's so good. But again, I'm looking for a sale right now or something like that.
I think I might try another run of Baldur's Gate 3, actually. There's been another update, and I might build up courage to play another whole session of that.
Have you played it with friends?
It
solo?
I played it with two, and that was a lot of fun. And then I played it solo as well. I'm not sure which I prefer. They're very different experiences, but yeah.
I have a question for Jack, though, because I forgot to ask you earlier. Why Tropico 5, not 6, not 4? Like, exactly the 5 is the entry you play.
So I actually got Tropico 5 through some promotion before. So it's honestly, the answer is just that it was most accessible to me, but... after looking to upgrade, I think I just realized that Tropico 6, even though it had DLCs, it didn't, at least at the forefront, add enough to incentivize me upgrading.
All right. Okay. Oh, and by the way, since we're here at the end of the episode, Jack, our newest member here at Critical Moves, do you want to perhaps introduce yourself a little bit to the listeners at home? Who are you? What would you like? Where do you come from?
Sure. So I am Jack. I'm really happy to be the newest member of Critical Moves. Had a lot of fun doing this podcast and listening to every previous episode. So I am a composer for games and media and fan of strategy games, obviously. And I am from America. So thank you for listening.
All right. All right. That's all. Thanks, everyone, for listening at home. All right. Any last words? Any plugins you want to do? Some promotion you want to send to the listeners at home? A website?
Oh, sure. If any gracious listeners like music, they can find me at www.dryexpression.com with no spaces or anything in there. And you'll find my full portfolio of music.
Lovely, lovely. Thank you very much. Thanks again. Thanks for joining us, guys. And see you next time.
Bye.
See you.